I'm Gene Basale, and this is Living History. This show explores the rich heritage of the Brandywine Valley outside Philadelphia, focusing on the people, places, and events over more than 300 years which have played an important part in our American heritage. Each show highlights a local town, event, or personality who's had a notable influence on our culture. And before we get started, I want to mention that our call-in line, if you have questions or comments, is 610-701-9243. That's 610-701-9243. This day in history, June 8th. In 1944, American troops who fought on Omaha Beach under General Omar Bradley link up with British forces from Gold Beach in Normandy after the successful defeat of Nazi forces all along the coastline of France, setting the stage for the end of World War II just over a year later. In 1966, the world of football prepares for a major changes as the National Football League and the American Football League announce they will merge. In 1968, former Senator and Attorney General Robert Kennedy is laid to rest at Arlington National Cemetery in Washington, D.C., less than 30 yards from his brother, President John F. Kennedy. Only 43 years old, Bobby Kennedy's assassination stunned the nation, leading to numerous conspiracy theories regarding why two brothers, who were both high-profile politicians, would be murdered within a few years of each other. And in 1984, two alumni from the television show Saturday Night Live helped create one of the most popular comedy films of the era, as Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray star in Ghostbusters, a movie that would become enormously popular and even lead to a sequel. Aykroyd, Murray, and other SNL stars would later build their reputations in film and become successful in a variety of roles. When people think of museums, they often dwell on scenes focusing on a single theme, like nature or technology. But there's a museum in Doylestown, Pennsylvania, that showcases thousands of items from American and world history in a wonderful and eclectic mix, touching on numerous aspects of life. The Mercer Museum displays a wide assortment of items dating from the 1800s into the 20th century, including canoes, stagecoaches, tools, artifacts, arts and crafts, technology, and tens of thousands of other relics of our American heritage, along with items from other nations. Named in honor of historian, industrialist, and archaeologist Henry Mercer, the collection highlights an amazing assortment of artifacts not only from the U.S., but also from West Africa, China, and Southeast Asia. Walking through the Mercer Museum, guests are presented with a fascinating assortment of items which come into view and remind them of the incredibly rich heritage of human development. Nearby is the Fonthill Castle and the Moravian Tile Works, both great places to wander around and explore. Today we're talking with Corey Amsler, Vice President for Collections and Interpretation at the Mercer Museum, who will share his knowledge and experience with our listeners. Corey, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
My pleasure. When was the Mercer Museum founded?
Well, the museum as it stands today was constructed and founded in 1916, although the roots of the collection go back further than that to 1897, when the museum's founder, Henry Mercer, began forming the collection, and even further than that because the agency that sort of operates the Bucks County operates the Mercer Museum is the Bucks County Historical Society, which traces its roots to 1880.
Mm-hmm. And did Mr. Mercer kind of use his personal collection to start a museum?
Well, it started out actually not being his personal collection, but in 1897, he had been working as an archaeologist, a prehistoric archaeologist at the University of Pennsylvania Museum, and he had sort of an epiphany when he was visiting a local junk shop, and rather than focusing on the artifacts of centuries ago, he decided that he would turn his eye to the more recent past, and he began collecting tools tools and objects of everyday life that were becoming outmoded in the industrial era. And he was collecting initially under the auspices of the Bucks County Historical Society, of which he was a member. So his first collecting was actually for the Historical Society, and then he began sort of forming his own collection, which he eventually transferred to the society and built the museum to house it.
Mm-hmm. Well, people who have read a bit of history know that the mid to late 1800s was a time of major industrialization in America. Tell us about Mr. Mercer's contributions or interactions throughout that time period.
Yeah, well, Mercer was born in 1856, and so he really witnessed as a young man America's transition from a pre-industrial to an industrial economy. And it was really sort of his recognition that something was being lost that led him to his collecting, recognizing that essentially what he was collecting was the junk, the cast sauce, the castaways of an earlier era. And he felt it was going to be his mission to acquire and preserve a record of the tools, the objects of everyday life of an earlier America that were being rapidly discarded.
Mm-hmm. What are the major themes of the museum?
Well, at its core, and as Mercer sort of envisioned it, the sort of chief theme was the relationship of human beings to tools. When Mercer used the word tool, he really meant any object that was created that had a function and was created to meet the wants and needs of people. So, certainly a wrench or a hammer was a tool, but also a whale boat, a trade figure, a wagon, artifacts of communication, transportation, leisure. All of those were tools in a sense, because they all had a function. They were all were responses, creative responses to human needs and wants. So it really, the museum traditionally is about human beings' relationship to stuff, relationship to things. A wide range of things. I mean, Mercer started collecting materials locally, gradually expanded his search, but again was focused on what he perceived as a sort of pre-industrial era, which has a bit of a sliding timeline, but pre-1850 American material culture. But then in his later life, he also recognized that people in other cultures around the world had made different choices in terms of designing, developing tools and artifacts to meet their wants and needs. So he arranged, as you mentioned in your introduction, he arranged to collect cross-culturally and acquired materials related to Africa, to Asia, and other places around the world.
Mm-hmm. What is the mission or main objective of the Mercer Museum?
The main mission is again sort of extends from Mercer. It's really in developing, showing the relationship of human beings to the material world, and more than that, we hope to inspire an appreciation for the past and of history, and in more recent years, the museum has established a changing exhibition gallery where we can develop and bring in traveling shows that focus on other aspects of history and culture.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been at the Mercer Museum?
I've been here since 1988 in various capacities.
Oh, quite a long time. And have your responsibilities changed over the years? I mean, currently you're responsible for the collections and interpretation, I guess. But what have you been? What have been your areas of responsibility?
Well, I really sort of started as assistant curator and curator, focusing primarily on the preservation, research, study. study, cataloging, and exhibition of collections. My responsibilities now extend really across all of the core museum functions, including education programs, our changing exhibit program, as well as the sort of traditional curatorial role of you know, preservation and acquisition of collections.
Mm-hmm. First thing comes up in my mind, do you take donations of period pieces?
Yes, absolutely. The museum continues to collect, really collecting in a couple of areas. One, certainly we're interested in things that relate to pre-industrial American culture, material culture, just as Mercer did. Although as the Bucks County Historical Society, we also acquire materials related to local history and really right up to the present. So our chronological timeline for local history collecting is much broader than that of Mercer originally for the Mercer collection.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about some of the more interesting displays you have there at the museum.
Yeah. I mean, the original castle is a very evocative environment containing the majority of the permanent collections, and it's a 8-story concrete building containing really everything it took to make America, with the emphasis on thing, every object, every tool. It's a truly encyclopedic collection of American material culture, objects related to woodworking, to metalworking, to pottery, textile working, and so on and so forth. It's a sort of a catalog of everyday life in early America. But in addition to that, as I mentioned, we also feature changing exhibitions, traveling displays coming in from other museums, from traveling exhibit services, and then we mount our own temporary exhibitions in the gallery. Coming up very soon, for example, is an exhibit, Long May She Wave, a traveling exhibit featuring the collection of a graphic designer, Kit Hinrichs, from San Francisco, California. He is curating that exhibit for us, containing a wide variety of flags and flag-related graphic arts and folk art. And that exhibit will open the weekend of the 4th of July.
Excellent. We're going to be right back after a short commercial break, but we're talking with Corey Amsler of the Mercer Museum in Doylestown, Pennsylvania.
Do you have a wedding, graduation, baptism, confirmation, milestone, or birthday to plan? You need John Surratt Catering, one of the most highly rated and preferred caterers throughout the Philadelphia area. They will be there to create and cater your event while assisting as much or as little as you desire. Planning a decadent, over-the-top company gala? Need help transforming your backyard into the party of the year? Want to wow your clients with a delicious luncheon? Then you need John Surratt Catering. All you have to do is call, and they'll handle the rest. Located at 835 Lincoln Avenue in Westchester, visit them at SurrockCatering.com or call 610-640-2836. That's 610-640-2836.
If you had to choose a roofer, would you choose one with limited experience and knowledge, or would you choose a roofer certified as a master elite contractor by the largest manufacturer in the nation, GAF, a distinction shared by only 3% of the nation's roofers? I'm talking about GP Martini Roofing, who also does siding, windows, doors, and offers an ironclad guarantee that he'll repair or replace any roof for defects within its normal life. GP Martini Services, Chester, Delaware, Bucks, and Montgomery counties, with free estimates and consultation, and does both commercial and residential. Go to their website at martiniroofing.com for special savings, or call 610-873-1696. And also, financing is available with no payments for a full year. Now, what roofer would you call? GP Martini is the answer, 610-873-1696.
There's a new epidemic in the United States. It kills between 40,000 and 90,000 Americans each year, according to the National Academy of Sciences. Can doctors and hospitals cure it? No. In fact, the medical community is the cause. The epidemic is called medical negligence. I'm Steve Karp from the Chester County law firm of Karp & Hart. My firm is one of only a few in Chester County which handles medical malpractice cases. I've been practicing in the field of medical malpractice law for over 30 years. If you or someone in your family have been a victim of medical negligence by a doctor or hospital, you might want to give us a call. There's no charge for us to review your medical records. A fee is paid only if we are successful in winning your case. My number is 610-430-2200. Ask for me, Steve Karp, or my partner, Peter Hart. That's 610-430-2200. And don't forget to join me and Peter every Tuesday at noon for Legal Talk right here on WCHE.
The names you want to hear from?
Chester County District Attorney Tom Hogan joins us.
The stories you care about.
The investigation focused on former Superintendent Richard Como.
This is the talk of Chester County, 1520 WCHE.
And this is Living History. We're talking with Corey Amsler of the Mercer Museum outside Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Corey, do you focus on any particular time period or specific persons in the collection there?
Yeah, well, the original core of the museum, the bulk of the collection dates from 1750 to 1850, something like that. But of course, there are earlier materials. We have Native American archaeological materials dating, you know, thousands of years into the past. And then in terms of our Bucks County collections, you know, really we collect right up to the present. Our changing exhibits range broadly across time and space. I mean, we are in many ways a history museum, just as an art museum is an art museum. You know, we have the capacity to deal with history from a variety of time periods and subjects.
Mm-hmm. When I think of the mid 1800s, I think of steamboats. Do you have anything related to steamboats?
Well, see, that's sort of the dividing line of the Mercer collection. Steam, you know, technology, Mercer would have considered an industrializing technology, and so he was really focused on pre-age of steam, manual technologies. So no steam in the collection.
Okay. If visitors come to see the museum, what kinds of things can they expect when they first walk right in?
Well, I think the first thing that they're going to experience in walking into the original museum is sort of an oh wow moment. Mm-hmm. They walk into the central court of the museum and look up. They're going to see suspended above their heads artifacts of every description: Conestoga wagon, a whaleboat from New Bedford, Massachusetts. It's an extraordinary array of early American material culture and displayed in rather imaginary and creative fashion. Mercer, because he was really collecting a lot of the cast offs, the junk, as it were, of early America, really had to display things in such a way that to show folks the importance of these objects that were being discarded. And so by hanging things and forcing folks to look at objects in ways they weren't used to, he certainly did that.
Mm-hmm. Is this what you would call a family-friendly museum with something for all ages?
Well, you know, the environment of the museum, I think, being a castle, is very stimulating for kids. But on another level, a lot of our traveling exhibits, changing exhibits, have hands-on activities associated with them. We do have a number of activities for children in the museum, and kids also love to look for the footprints of one of Henry Mercer's favorite dogs, Rollo, which are preserved in concrete on one of the upper level stairs of the museum.
Oh, that's interesting. Do you have a lecture or a speaker series?
We don't really have a series per se. You know, many of our exhibits, our changing exhibits, inspire particular programs, so our program calendar is always changing. There are certain programs that we do on an annual basis, walking tours and youth programs, family programs, summer camps, and things like that. We do have, if folks are interested, we have an interpreter who portrays Henry Mercer, who will go out and into the community and present programs in person.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that you're connected with the Font Hill site, which was Mercer's home. Tell us a little bit about the links between the two and Font Hill.
Sure. Well, Font Hill was Mercer's home and was the first of three concrete buildings that he was responsible for designing and having constructed. It was built between 1908 and 1912. Mercer moved in 1912. When Mercer died, he left it in trust, and eventually after his housekeeper and his tile works manager had lived there for many years, and after their decease, the property passed under the care of the Bucks County Historical Society. So we operate Font Hill Castle as a house museum, available for tours. And then the second building that Mercer constructed was the Moravian Pottery and Tile Works, which is his tile factory, which is operated by Bucks County Park System. The Mercer was the third of the three concrete buildings.
Mm-hmm. I'm fascinated. Why concrete?
A couple of reasons. First of all, I think Mercer, being a potter, enjoyed the opportunity to sort of sculpt and mold concrete into sort of a castle form. It was a much less expensive way of building a castle, if one was to build a castle in the early 20th century America, than trying to build it of stone. But it's sort of plastic qualities, I think, gave him the opportunity to create a very creative home for himself, and certainly when this comes to the museum itself, fireproof as Mercer, concrete as Mercer conceived, it was fireproof. And if he was going to spend all of this time collecting, he wanted to put his collections into as safe a structure as possible.
Mm-hmm. Now the Moravian Tile Works are also quite interesting. I've been there a couple of times. You can see a huge variety of different tiles and different patterns there. Did he have a special interest in making tiles?
Beginning in 1898, Mercer decided to kind of go into the tile production business began on a very small scale, eventually building his tile works in 1910. This was a period, the arts and crafts period, when architects and home builders were interested in tiles for exterior architectural purposes, but also for interiors, floors, pavements, fireplace surrounds, and so on. Mercer's tiles, many of them were certainly decorative. All had a very handcrafted, handmade quality to them. Many of them tell stories, and Mercer was very interested in the narrative possibilities of tile making, and he designed all of the tiles that were ultimately produced by his workers at the Tile Works.
Interesting. Now, are the tiles produced today, but also by hand?
Yes, essentially, hand with some assistance by machines, but primarily it's a handcrafted process.
Mm-hmm. The tiles are absolutely beautiful. We did buy a few of them for decorative purposes. Any one of our listeners who like decorative tiles, the Moravian Tile Works has just a phenomenal collection and items available for purchase. Your website describes literally thousands of artifacts and pieces of Americana available for viewing at the museum. Do you have any personal favorites in the collection?
Well, Well, you know, one of the things that Mercer gravitated toward were objects related to the Pennsylvania Germans, Pennsylvania German decorative and folk art, and ranging from furniture to pottery to fracture or decorated manuscript materials. And I admit I have am drawn to that kind of material as well. But there's also just a number of objects in the collection that really are evidence of Mercer's own genius in terms of what he would choose to preserve, things that no one else may have thought to preserve. For example, we have a made-up object in the collection. It's a giant noisemaker, essentially. It's called a Calathumpian rattle that was used to entertain and serenade a young couple on their wedding night. It's basically a compilation of pieces of other tools and probably would have ended up on the trash pile for a lot of collectors, but Mercer recognized it as evidence of a custom that had passed away, and so those kinds of objects that Mercer recognized as artifact rather than as simply junk are particularly interesting and again demonstrate his genius.
That's quite interesting. Are there any interactive exhibits where people can kind of have a hands-on experience there?
Well, many of our programs contain interactivity. There are throughout the museum. We have these sort of animals on the loose stations that the kids have the opportunity to try some things, to try their hand, and an exhibit called Animals on the Loose up on the fifth floor of the museum also is a very attractive hands-on environment for children.
Very, very interesting. Many historical sites and museums enlist public support for helping to fund their exhibits and ongoing activities. Tell us about your outreach to the community.
Yeah. Well, of course, membership is very important to the museum, and we have quite a number of members, and encourage membership. It's one great way to remain engaged with the museum, and also to visit as many times as you'd like. We have many volunteers who have been with us for a number of years, and of course, we could not do the work that we do without the generosity of a lot of donors, sponsors, who help to help us to fund some of the traveling exhibits and other activities at the museum.
Mm-hmm. We've got just under a minute left. What's a good time for people to visit the museum?
Well, we're open 363 days a year, 362 days a year, I should say, all but Christmas, Thanksgiving, and January 1st,
New Year's Day.
So almost any time is a good time to visit the museum, and particularly to check our website for what our current exhibit is, and visit that as well.
Excellent. And that website is at mercermuseum.org.
Correct.
Very, very good. Hey. Corey, thank you so much for being a part of our show today. It's really been a pleasure speaking with you. We recommend people visit the Mercer Museum if they are in the area of Bucks County. Be sure to join us next Wednesday, June 15th at 1 p.m. Eastern, when we'll be speaking with Lynn King of the Delaware Astronomical Society about local Mount Cuba Observatory. Thank you all for joining us today for Living History.